The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And Cody Garbrandt, all of a sudden, super relevant again at 135 pounds.
My passion's back, you know. A lot of fighters lose that, and it's hard to find. I am just so blessed that the Lord has kept me driven, motivated.
Cody!
Video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. We're getting started really fast because we wanted to give Cody Garbrandt a huge introduction because we haven't had you on the show in a while. But we started as you were testing your audio and video, so you're here with us. Thanks for coming back on, man. It is really good to see you, and congratulations on that that win you had. I forget the date of it, but you looked great your last fight.
March, yeah, thanks. Appreciate it, guys. Always a pleasure joining, you know, yourself and a legend and Matt. So I'm excited to be on. I'm glad we made it work.
They said during that fight, I wanted to, before I forget, because my memory stinks, that you had gotten some kind of a nose surgery. And every time you're on, because I have such sinus problems, when was it that you got nose surgery and what did you do? How recent was that?
Let's see. I think I got the, well, I was supposed to fight Hani Yahya two times and the dude pulled out weeks before the fight. We had the same neck injury and I'm getting the neck procedure done. And then I moved out to Vegas and I went to a couple of doctors and they said I was, you know, allergies. So I went and finally, like for 7 months, I was getting crazy sinus infections, super sick all the time, on and off antibiotics. So I went to this, ENT and got my basically a CAT scan of my nose. My nose had been shattered and even though I had a broken nose, so the infection was getting trapped behind my cheek. So I went and had a sinus surgery in October after the second time Hani pulled out like 2 weeks before the fight. And I was going to take a late replacement, and I just, you know, I'm going to get the surgery done to feel better because I had a shit camp. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm glad I did it because it's massively improved a lot of sleep, recovery, breathing.
Yeah, I had something done with my breathing is bad too. And I'm always interested in fighters. Amanda Nunes has had a lot of stuff with her breathing. And I mean, for you guys, especially when you're not breathing properly, I mean, that can really get you hurt in a fight.
Yeah. For sure. This fighting is a cardio based sport. You know, the one that has the best cardio is usually going to stay technical, going to stay sharp, you know, stay more calm, you know, in a 3 to 5 round fight. So cardio is everything in our sport.
So how does it now look? You're back in the win column, man. That's got to feel great. I know what it's like to have a couple L's and then bounce back. And it's like, oof, all right, I got that monkey off the back. Let's go straight up from here. So now we got our nose straight. We got our breathing straight. What's going on with our camp? Where are we living now, Cody? Where are we training?
So I'm here in Vegas. I'm here in Vegas. Ended up getting divorced last year.
Oh.
And moved to Vegas. And, you know, I have a son, so couldn't be far from him. I left Team Alpha Male. That was extremely difficult. You know, I mean, those are guys who were – I went out there at 1-0. I was 22 years old, went out there. Uriah took me under his wing. And got into the UFC at 5-0. Like I just had a lot of awesome stuff happen. I mean, I won a world title with him, you know, and then, you know, life happened. So I came here to be with my son and I was figuring out, you know, the training camp. So, I mean, all that stuff happened with the nose surgery and the neck procedure that I had done. I had 3 bulging discs for a while ago and I'm getting that fixed. And it's an occurring injury that just keeps reoccurring. Obviously, we train so hard, Matt, you know how it is. There's always something that we deal with. So coming out here was like an adjustment for sure. Like I had to find new training partners, new coaches, new team, new kind of, and I'm a creature of habit. I eat the same shit. I sleep at the same time. I watch the same TV shows. I mean, there's nothing that I don't do that's not regimented. So coming out here, I was in a whole just different world trying to figure out scheduling and you know, training at the PI, you know, and just finding the coaches and teammates that I can, you know, rely on to show up. Like, hey, we're going at 6 a.m. Let's go get the work that are going to show up at time. Like out here, it's different. People train the middle of the day, 2 or 3 o'clock is the pro practice. I'm like, man, 3 o'clock, like you can already have a two training sessions in before 3 o'clock. You know, with Uriah, he has the guys, you know, we train at 9 a.m. So we already have two sessions in by 12 o'clock. And then if you have the rest of the afternoon to do your life, you can do it. So there was a lot of, you know, just adapting to it, but it's good. It's going good.
Can I just, Jimmy, let me just jump in here for a second. Let me just applaud you. On being an amazing father. Now it's very, I know how loyal and how close you are with the alpha males, the team alpha, I should say. Now it's a little bit more politically correct, but there's everybody, there's girls there that are alphas, you know, but I know that was your college, man. I mean, that's where you grew up and I know how close you are. You guys like family, but to move closer and to uproot your whole life for your child, that is a beautiful thing. And as a father, I recognize that. And I think that should be brought up because that's not an easy thing. You don't want to, I mean, you moved to Vegas to be closer to your son, correct?
For sure. 100%. So I moved.
That's the most honorable thing, Cody. I already held you in very high regard, way even higher now, buddy.
Because some
fathers aren't like that, man.
Yeah, it's
an easy for them. There's some problems with the misses. And it's like, you know what? And they just go along with their life, and now you have a broken child. So I think that's beautiful, man. That's great.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't have a father growing up. I had you know, the Lord blessed me with a great mom. You know, she's did everything for us and so much for my siblings as well. So, you know, I missed out on that. I wanted to give him everything. I don't want to miss him, you know.
Yeah.
And becoming, you know, I was a world champion at 25. I had my son at 26. So it was like trying to be a world champion and do everything that comes with that, you know, understand, you know, the obligations with that. And then being a father, I don't want to miss anything. I mean, I was in the hospital and the nurses were in there trying to change my son's diaper. And I was like, oh, I got, you know, like what's one diaper, you know, like, I want to do everything. I was bathing him. Like, I just don't want to miss anything. He's so special to me. So I couldn't imagine being away from him. You know, I just, he gives me strength, you know, he comes to the gym with me. You know, I pick him up from school and he's like, we got to go to the gym today. I'm like, yeah, Kai, you want to go to Disneyland? You want to buy all these little toys after school at the he loves going to Target. You know, I'm like, yeah, we got to work. So, yeah, he's a blessing, man. But there was no second chances. The only thing I was worried about is, you know, obviously leaving and moving, but it makes it better. You know, I get to see him. You know, we split week on, week off. You know, so I get to see him even when I don't have him. You know, on my week. So it's good, man. Plus technology too. You know, iPads. He don't really have much of the FaceTime, but he'll like, all right, Dad, I love you. Got to go. Boom.
Well, you know, moving, uprooting from Team Alpha and going to Vegas, like, had you stayed out there, the distraction of not being around your son and it may have done you more damage than getting a new team. So either way, it was a huge issue.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to go back this this camp. I just had, you know, last camp, last, well, I had 3 fight camps in the last, 8 months. You know, I fought one time, but, you know, the two that Hani pulled out. He didn't want that smoke, but you know, I found another opponent. I had Julio Arce, and then he ended up tearing his knee. Speedy recovery to him, and then 5 weeks out, we had Trevin Jones replaced because I picked him because it was only southpaw. I was training for a southpaw for 6 weeks, and I'm like, I haven't fought a southpaw in a while, and since my debut in the UFC, so I was like, oh, let's have this challenge, you know. And I was working with Dewey Cooper a lot. He's a southpaw kickboxing, you know, he's phenomenal. I really like working with him, with Eric Nixick. So I find my own kind of, it's different. I kind of do my own schedule each week. I have it like, I write it down every Monday or every Sunday and I have it on this little notepad and just I go through everything, my PT, my training. So just in there. So it's kind of different, you know, like Alpha Male has kind of set practices and routine. And this one, I kind of pick and choose where I need each week, what I need more of, what I need less of. Obviously, it varies when I'm in camp, out of camp, but it's going pretty well. You know, like I said, I got the win last camp with everything that I had going on. No excuses. We all go on there injured, but you know, it was good. You know, that kid was, you know, he was tough. He had an equalizing, you know, power. You know, that's who's going. He had a lot of good knockouts. So, you know, get that win, go from there. Going back to 35, I felt really good. So I'm fighting August 19th. And I think it's Boston, Massachusetts is the never been to Boston, so I'm pretty excited for that. And I'm fighting Mario Bautista. So this kid's, you know, he's a tough kid. He's finished his last four opponents. He's doing what he's supposed to do in the organization. So I'm excited to go out there and, you know, show him that there's, you know, different kind of levels to this sport. And, you know, but props to him. You know, it's going to be a great fight. I think he's a talented fighter. I just don't think he's ready for that next jump.
You look so good in that Jones fight too, and you know, everyone was the guys calling the fight were noticing it. How your movement was so good, your footwork was great. You must have felt really good after that. He had a good third, 29-28. I thought it was the right call, but you looked incredible in that fight. And they were saying that you hadn't looked that good in a long time, like whatever it was that changed for you. So that must have made you feel good, and you must have noticed that in the fight. He literally didn't seem to know what to do with you.
Yeah, I felt really good in the fight. You know, I wish he would have brought more of a fight. He feel like he was just second guessing himself. I think just the elusivity and the speed and the footwork. I think a lot of people get wrapped up on my hand speed and power, but also the elusivity and the footwork. My feet are faster than my hands. Sometimes, you know, you just see me in a ladder drills. My coach, you know, cracks up because my feet get moving so fast and I kind of like mess up the drills. But I contribute a lot of my speed and movement and being able to be defensive with footwork. So I use a lot of footwork. So it's good to get back to that, you know, get back to that. Wish you would have drew out a little bit more of, you know, some counters and stuff. But like I said, when you have power like that, you just rely on that at all times. You always think that, all right, it takes one, two shots, I can get them. And that's, he's found success in previous outings with a lot of tough guys. Actually, he knocked Mario Bautista out. He knocked Timur, the Russian phenomenal fighters, you know, and he was getting his ass kicked, and he just has that equalizer. So he thought that, you know, he'd catch me one or two times and put me out, and hit me like twice in the fight. Felt good going in there with some injuries. I ended up warming up, doing the shakeout, getting the worst stinger in my arm. So I literally had like one arm in the fight. I took the second takedown and found out it was guillotine and got a stinger. So the rest of the round, I was just had no left arm, but you know, I was smart. I was patient. I remember Coach Dewey was, you know, just saying, stick to the game plan, you know, do what you do, you know, and it takes two to fight. This dude doesn't want to draw any action. So just keep doing what you're doing and you're winning the fight. So like I said, it was good to get in there and get the win, and excited to, you know, just keep growing.
There was a moment in that fight where you did something with your feet. I don't know what you would call, but you're back and forth very quickly. And it could be looking like you're just kind of having a good time and fucking around. And Cormier raised a good point. He said that might be the way he's just getting himself, like getting his feet moving. Because some guys have a way that in their exercise where they'll do those weird little movements to actually get their feet moving. What was that? Were you just having a good time, or was that like a thing like, no, you wanted to get your feet moving?
Well, there's a couple things that I did for that reason. You know, in wrestling, I had an old school coach. I mean, he was very strict on if we are out of bounds and our opponent makes it back to the center of the circle before us, he would give us bear crawls. Like we call it get wheeling. You get back to the center and you wait on your opponent and you start wheeling, you're trying to just bounce around, keep your feet moving. So that's what I do. I have my coaches call out like, hey, if I'm kind of flat footed or kind of just standing right in front of this opponent, get wheeling. And then wheeling means either, you know, do footwork, get off on an angle, head movement, something. It just constantly reminds me to not stay stagnant. Don't stay in front of this and wait for this opponent to either get rhythm or get, you know, offense going. So it helps me just kind of, you know, stay in the fight and just keep my feet moving, you know?
Okay.
And then also the second time was to get to draw something out of him. This kid would not, I think a lot of times was the kicking attack. You know, Dewey is a phenomenal kickboxer, so I had a lot of sharp, fast kicks to my game. And, you know, I think I came out heavy kick game. I really wasn't getting the hands going because I wasn't really getting any offense thrown back at me. So I'm more of a counter striker, so I like to draw that out. And he just wasn't, you know, I think the speed and elusivity really played a factor in his non-offensive attack.
Hey, Cody, I seen something a few weeks back. It might have been longer than that, less than that. I'm shot. But I remember seeing something on your Instagram that made me so happy. It was you and my friend Dominic Cruz not growling at each other, not getting separated, smiling, taking a nice picture together. I was just in Manchester with some of my former rivals. And It's funny. It's funny how a lot of that melts away. I just got a text yesterday from George St. Pierre. Said nothing. It was just the latest trailer for Ahsoka, the new Star Wars series coming out. We're kind of nerds with that. But anyway, it's funny how you become friends with some of your former rivals. Tell me about that, because I know you guys used to, you know, you guys had a nice rivalry going.
Yeah, for sure. I think, me and Dom had a heated rivalry. I think that stemmed a lot, not even just from being me. Maybe it was the persona that I brought up. I was a young in the sport. You know, I was very brash, you know, outspoken too. And he had his rivalry with that Team Alpha Male. So I think that was like, oh, here's another Team Alpha Male member, you know, this and that. So I'm like, well, I'm different. You know, I'm different than these guys. This is how I kind of, you know, a lot of them are, you know, favorites, not really non-confrontational. TJ wasn't very confrontational at the time. You know, Joe, them guys, I'm kind of very outspoken and just brash and kind of wear my heart on the sleeve, say what I want. And mine, maybe sometimes it's not the best to say at that time. But so we had different personalities. So it was just a conflict. But me and Dominic, we ran into each other multiple times after we fought. And, you know, we had PT at the PI, you know, you have the UFC PI, and he's on the next bed beside me getting worked on. We're just chit-chatting, talking, you know. So this is the first time I was like, hey, you know what? We're at the USA Wrestling, showing support to the wrestlers. And I was like, hey, let's grab a flick. And we're just talking. And Uriah comes up filming, like, hey, you know, hey, break it up, you two, break it up. And so Uriah, myself, and Dom was there. So it's pretty cool to see how it does come full circle. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, when you share an octagon with another human for 25 minutes, I mean, you have nothing but respect for that guy. You know what I mean? Anybody that I share the octagon, there's always some sort of respect, unless you're TJ. Fuck that guy. But everyone else, I got respect for. You know what I mean? But yeah, so it was cool to see that. And you know, he comes from a wrestling background too, so it was cool to see a lot of those athletes train. It was good, man. Actually, you know, it was very helpful with some stem cell company to help me out. You know, getting, you know, sent me the number. The lady messaged me, so we're in. Works with her to go down and get some stem cells after the fight. So, you know, I was very grateful for that.
Isn't it nice not to have, like, even no matter where you are in life, that awkwardness in a room when a guy is in the room that you're in and you're not speaking and you're not making eye contact. It's just, it's such a pain in the ass. It's so much easier in life to not have that, just to be able to say hello to somebody.
Yeah, I think I have, you know, obviously when I'm younger, you know, just you're full of piss and vinegar. You know what I mean? You're just ready to drop the hat. Now I'm like, oh, I got a kid. I got to check my surroundings in case some shit happens. So I'm more thought out of, you know, if I have to scrap it any point. But, you know, you get paid for it now, so there's no there's really no need to. You know, I go to the PI and sometimes Forrest Griffin's at the front and he's like, hey, just don't go upstairs. And I was like, oh, is it closed? You know, is it the upstairs closed? He's like, no, I just think it's best if you don't go upstairs. And I caught on. I'm like, Forrest, what's going on? Who's up there? He's like, oh, Sugar's up there. And I was like, I don't give a fuck about Sugar. Like, man, I'm here to get PT in my training. Yeah. He's like, you know what I mean? It just cracks me up. You know, so I go on there. I'm like, I'm not definitely not trying to put any bad position. I'm like, we're going to fight one day and we're going to get paid and it's going to be great. So, you know, those are going to come. Those fights are coming. And, you know, like you said, it's nice to go into a room and not have to, like, keep looking over your shoulder. You know, it's nice,
right? It's funny, though. It's like when you first broke on the scene on The Ultimate Fighter, even then, I'm similar. I can be a little hot-headed. Conor McGregor's talking some shit. You want to do something about it? You're like, I'll do something about it. Right? Yeah. First one up. I'll do. People are like, oh, who's this guy? It's fucking interesting, man. That's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, man. Somebody's got to step up sometimes. I'm with you, bro.
Bro, it was like 2 weeks of Conor just, man, he's, you know, obviously he's quick, you know, witted. You know, he could tell Faber was not wanting to. He was just, all right, you know, it was about the TJ situation. We were kind of in limbo with the two because TJ just came out and was telling he's with the team. He's, you know, fuck that. He's, you know, and whoever, if he wants to go leave, it was just that he's lying to us saying he's with, you know what I mean? Just be real. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just the whole situation that got kind of blew out of proportion. Obviously, then you had the Ultimate Fighter with me and TJ too, and where I was at in my life. You know, so it just blew out. But yeah, exactly. I was like, man, like, Conor keeps asking for someone to fight him. And then it was him and Andre going at it. I'm like, hey, but if you want something to do something about, you know, so I'll do it. And then I remember Lorenzo and Dana were like, dude, look, we love you, Cody. Like, I only had two fights in the UFC, so I wasn't shit. You know what I mean? And they're like, you know, we love you, man. We think that you're going to do big things for us in the organization. And he's like, you can't be fighting on Ultimate Fighter. I'm like, all right. He goes, you're asked to go to PFL or whatever, World Series at the time.
Oh,
I was like, all right. So I was on my best behavior after that.
And our next interview is actually in the waiting. Before we let you go, to Cody, I wanted to ask you, to moving to Vegas, I get into such trouble in places, like I'm so easily distracted. How hard is it, or how did it take into getting used to in Vegas, where you're there full time, to not allow the natural distractions to kind of interfere with your mindset?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people can let that, you know, sway them. They go out to the nightclub. It's like, yo, it's like 4 o'clock, and the next thing, you know, the after party, and they're drinking. Luckily, man, actually next week I'll be 1 year sober from alcohol. I still smoke.
Oh, great.
Still smoke weed, you know, so I'm never giving that up. But you know, alcohol, I just nothing wrong with it. I just, one, I'm a lightweight. Two, I get hungover so easily. And then also, like, there's no reason for me to be on the club. You know, if I was out in the club, I'm just getting in trouble or looking for trouble. You know, this thing's happens. You know what I mean? So yeah, for me, it's, I gotta have my son. You know, I have other things that I do outside of my UFC career, but I eat, sleep, train. This is what I love to do, you know, until this door closes. You know, there's life outside of fighting for me, but right now I'm just focused on, you know, doing what I can do to make the best martial arts. I still grow every day, and that's what's I love about this sport. Like, I'm still learning, I'm still hungry, you know, even with the ups and downs of this career. Same with life, you know, it's not going to give up on life because I've had ups and downs. You know, I truly believe that I have some of the best fights ahead of me, you know, and just, you know, working every day to be a better person, better fighter, better father. So yeah, I just kind of stayed to my own self. I live out in Henderson, tucked in the mountains.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I stay away from the strip. I mean, it has its perks. It has good food, good coffee spots, good shows, you know, good concerts. A lot of things come here. So I go and do that. I went to Red Hot Chili Peppers and ate some mushrooms before the show. So, yeah, it was pretty fun.
Fuck you, Dave.
So, you know, stuff like that, you know, for me is I don't need to be in the club, but I'll go out to some concerts and have some fun with friends.
It's the little things in life.
Yeah.
Cody, man, come back on soon, dude. You're fighting in Boston. Is that August 19th?
I believe. August 19th, yeah.
Fuck yeah, man. We'll be watching, dude. And
yeah.
Yeah, man. Congrats on everything. Congrats.
Yeah, great life. Great fight against Jones, man. Congratulations. Yeah, I was really happy for you. And we'll talk again soon, okay?
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime, yeah, buddy. Cool. Good talking to you.
All right. Well, my champ.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And I'm obsessed with any fighter. We have Gary Owen coming in. Any fighter who has nose issues, it's all I want to talk about. Because Cody used to do that balloon thing up the nose. Remember he got his guys like 6 years ago to do that, where they put the balloon and they expand it in your sinuses and it hurts, but it helps you breathe for a while.
That's on top of your head. I think you're thinking of Howie Mandel's first act.
Let's bring in Gary.
You remember how we made that?
Of course I do. It would be a medical glove. It was a medical glove he put on his head.
Do you know why he used to do that? Because now it makes sense. I heard him on a story. When he first went up to do stand-up, he was a germaphobe his whole life, and he had those gloves. So he didn't know what to do. So he put that on his face, and he blew it up, and people started laughing.
Oh, I didn't know he carried that because he was a germaphobe. Hey, Gary, how you doing? We're just talking about Howie Mandel.
Oh, yeah, he's a germaphobe.
Yeah.
I was saying how he carries around that the gloves, and I saw him on a podcast talking about his first time. It might have been on Rogan, talking about how he first went up for stand-up, and he had those things, and he just put it on and started blowing the thing on his face and the mask. Remember, he blew that thing up?
Yeah.
Right. And people started chuckling, and that was his first introduction into stand-up. That's his first getting his toes wet.
You wonder what he did with microphones, too, because, Gary, you know, you've talked into enough of them. Microphones, when you analyze them, are disgusting. Fucking guys up there coughing into a mic, and then you have to I try not to think about it. It's so foul, a microphone. I admire guys who use their own. Did you ever get like weird or germy about it? Once in a while, when I think about it, it fucks me up.
Since COVID, I walk out and I wipe it off.
You do.
But I make a joke of it because most comedians are going to do some sexual jokes.
Sure.
So I'll just be like, yeah, he talked about sucking dick a little too much, or he talked about porn a little too much, so I'm going to wipe it off. So
But you're literally doing it for practical purposes because it is a nasty thing.
For real.
There's people that will use their own mics, and I'm like, I kind of want to do that. It looks weird to pop it in and pop it out, but it's just so fucking disgusting. When you look, you see a piece of food and a microphone. It's just really nasty.
I never thought about it until COVID. I never thought about it.
Oh, it didn't occur to you until, for some reason, that's one of the, maybe I'm a little more of a germaphobe than I realize. And thank you for changing from last week to this week. We appreciate it. It was just, we like to have two guests a show, not three, so we can spend more time with each person.
Who did you have last week?
We had the co-main event. We had Anthony Smith and we had Johnny Walker, both fighters from the co-main event of the card. And so we wanted to make sure that we get, like, we wanted to give you time. We don't want to just have you for 8 minutes and then wrap up.
Yeah. That was a good fight. That was a good fight.
It was, yeah. What did you think? I mean, I tell you, Johnny Walker is a much calmer fighter than he was. Like, he seems like he's not as wild as he was. He's matured as a fighter. It's kind of nice to see that a veteran like Anthony Smith wasn't able to throw him off and get him to do something stupid.
But what was said? Because I heard Anthony Smith going, "You're attacking my family. You attacking my family." I didn't understand where that was coming from.
I think,
don't know.
Personally, I heard about that. Yeah. I heard that. And I think he was saying that like to try to hype himself up, like, "You're affecting my family with taking food out of the mouth." I think that's where he was coming from. Oh, but okay. I'm not positive. Can I just address something really fast? Because it's throwing me off.
Sure.
Harry, now listen, you can always cut this out if it's wrong. I'm reading on the notes, and I took a look at it. And then I'm looking at you, and I'm looking back, and I'm looking at you, and I'm like, all right, maybe I'm fucking off in this. He went on to win the funniest black comedian in San Diego contest. Now, maybe it's the lighting? What is going on here? Am I off in this? What is happening?
Hey, the Stylebender is the best black fighter to come out of Auckland, right?
Wait, what? What is happening? Wait, you went on to win the funniest black comedian in San Diego contest?
Yeah. It was a radio call-in. It was before the internet. So there was a hip-hop station called Z90. And I was in my truck, and I was in the Navy at the time. And they said, "We're looking for the funniest black comedian in San Diego." So I just called in. I didn't say I was black or white. I mean, I did put a little bass in my voice. I go, "Hey, Gary, yeah, you got a contest? All right, yeah, I'm coming."
Well, that's amazing. So wait,
I showed up, and the crazy part is, like, I mean, San Diego wasn't like the competition was super steep. I mean, it wasn't like, but Nick Cannon was in the contest of all people. He was like 17.
So wait, when you won the contest and you went to get your award, did they say something like, "Wait a second"?
No. Oh, no. Here's the bad part. It wasn't like very organized. It wasn't like some nationwide, they brought all the best from San Diego back. Okay. It was like a hip hop station. They threw it together. Yeah, you got the title. And it was funny because I thought it was funny. That's why I put it in my bio. But it was like, when I say it was a very bad comedy competition, like, I think I'm humble, but I won by a landslide. It wasn't like that kind of contest where there was like rounds. It was like one night, like 20 guys called in and showed up. I bet you half of them had little to no stage time. And it was kind of a train wreck, honestly.
You know, it's funny. I won in 1993. I won a Black History Month comedy competition, but it was the same thing. It was like I was only 3 years in. They were mostly new comics. There was dancers and all that stuff. But I think, you know, when you're a white guy and you go on in that situation, they had so little expectations of me on that. The fact that I was halfway decent, I think, actually got me the trophy.
And it's the opposite as a white guy when you do those rooms where they don't know you, so to speak, in front of a black audience. It's the complete opposite of cancel culture. If you come in and say something completely off the wall that they're not expecting, oh, they're like, okay, we like this guy now.
Yeah.
Like, you're in. It's the complete opposite.
And you were in the service at the time. Had you done stand-up? Were you doing it a little bit, or were you dabbling, or did you want to do it?
Yeah, I went, it's weird. Like, I always knew I wanted to be a stand-up, but I didn't know how because I grew up in a small town in Ohio. And so I joined the Navy because it was one of those, I didn't know where I wanted to go. I just know where I didn't want to be. So I didn't be stuck in a small town in a trailer park. So I thought the entire state of California was LA. I'm thinking David Lee Roth. I wish y'all could beat California girls. I didn't know there was a Fresno and a yep. Bakersfield and all that. So when I got to San Diego, I immediately got in the phone book and I looked up this place called Comet Castle because I was the plan was to be a stand-up, but I thought you had to start in California. I didn't know you could start in whatever town you live in.
Sure.
I called this I called this number and I said, "Hey man, you got open mic?" And he was like, "Let me check." I go, "Let me check." And he puts me on hold. He comes back and he goes, "I can't find it." And I go, "What do you mean you can't find it?" I called a comic book store. And he was looking for a superhero named Open Mic. So he gave me the number to the comedy store in La Jolla. He actually was very helpful. He was like, "No, no." I said, "No, I'm trying to be a stand-up." He goes, "Oh." So he goes, "No, you got to call the La Jolla comedy stores." I called him, and that was my first time on stage.
And isn't it weird? That guy probably has no idea that he helped a guy begin a career that's lasted for, what, 20-something years? I don't know how long exactly you're in. I know it's over 20.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, that was 96 that I made that phone call.
So you were in Ohio watching, like, The Tonight Show and stuff. What comics got you interested? Was it Richard Pryor? Was there one specific comic that you said, that's what I want to do? Or you just seen stand-up comedy?
It was two things. It was, one was when Def Comedy Jam came out, I was like, whoa, that's the reaction I want. I never saw a reaction like that. But Eddie Murphy was probably the one because he had the Raw. You know, Delirious, I was a little too young. But when Raw came out, that was like my teenage years. So that was like, I was like, whoa, that was the one. But Def Jam was the first thing I watched. And I went, wow. And do you guys remember that commercial, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up?
Oh, yeah.
Old lady.
Yeah.
I remember watching like Annie at the Improv. And I'm like in 9th or 10th grade, and I was telling my buddies a joke like in the hallway. And that night I had seen a stand-up, and literally he did the same setup and punchline that I was telling my buddies in the hallway in high school. And I went, no way. And in my brain, I go, oh, I'm a comedian. Cause I was thinking, I think like a comic.
Yeah.
I knew he was going with the bit. And
that's interesting.
I right there.
And it's funny you said something too that I really relate to. For me, I'm older, so it was the reaction. It was Richard Pryor filmed live in concert. It was a concert he shot in Long Beach, California. And it was the reaction of the audience. Like, I'm like, I want to be able to do that to people. I want to be able to make people kind of physically move from laughing at something I'm saying. But it was really interesting you said that. It was almost not just the idea of being funny, but the idea of making people react to what I was saying like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what and I'm sure you get this a lot too, where they ask you, like, has cancel culture ruined stand up? And I always try to tell people, I go, not live, not if you go live. And that's, we're at a point you got to put the phones away. But as a comic, we enjoy those moments when it's uncomfortable, when the crowd's going, oh, I can't believe you said that. Like that's almost better than a laugh sometimes.
Yeah. When you hit them in a way that they don't expect to be hit. And it is funny. It's always been something, though. I mean, if you're from 96, you remember it was political correctness at one point. There's always something that people are getting mad at comedians for. If it's not, if after cancel culture, it'll be something else. There's always going to be something that we have to kind of navigate through to avoid completely wrecking our careers.
Yeah, right.
Now, you do a lot of acting. I mean, I'm seeing that Dottie and Soul is coming out. It's availability in... was digitally and streaming on May 19th. I want to know where that's streaming. And I want to know what that's about. And then you got Back on the Strip that's going to be in the theaters. Could you tell us about these projects here?
Well, Donnie and Soul comes out Friday. I think, yeah, it's streaming all over. But I think Amazon Prime is going to be the big one that people are going to see it.
Oh, nice. I have that.
It's got David Koechner and Leslie Uggams and Adam Sanders. It's his first movie. He directed it, wrote it. But it's basically this, this guy's like an Elon Musk. And he's got this hot young girlfriend and they go to a Halloween party and he dresses up as MC Hammer and he puts shoe polish on his face and she posts it. So automatically, because cancel culture goes after him, but they got to find a new Elon Musk to be the face of this new car company. So they hire this 70-year-old black lady that basically works like in the 7-Eleven within the building. And she becomes the face of the company. And it's just, and I'm David is the asshole CEO, David Koechner, and I'm the lawyer. So it's just like the four of us. It's good. I was shocked how well it was because we shot it over COVID. So we started in March of 2020. We filmed for about a week or two. COVID shut us down. We came back like 7-8 months later. There was a resurgent. We shut down again. Then a year later, we finished it in New York. So it was like I felt like I was doing Avatar Castaway. It just took so long to get it done.
It's funny with Leslie Uggams. So I haven't heard her name in so. She was Kizzy in Roots. She's been around for a long, long time. She's had a very long career, and I haven't heard her name in a long time. I love when I hear about people that you kind of watch when you're very young, or they're young actors or actresses, and then you realize that all these years later, they're still doing it. They're still making a living doing it.
Yeah, she's still sharp too. She's still sharp. And then back on the strip is that one's going to be funny. It's got a Tiffany Haddish and Kevin Hart's got a guest appearance in it. And then Bill Bellamy and Faison. And it's good, Kath. That's basically 25 years ago. The Chippendales ran the Vegas Strip. They were the hottest strippers in Vegas. We were the chocolate chips. We were the black strippers off the strip. And I was the one white chip. But nobody knew I was white because I'd spray tan my body black. And I wear a wrestling mask. So we're getting the band back together because I got kicked out of the Chippendales for dancing too hard. So I'm gonna go over there, appreciate hard dance. I'm going to the chocolate chips.
Now, this is not based on a true story, is it?
No.
Oh, okay. You never know. That does sound like something somebody would have done at one point to try to make money and make a move. Do you like acting? I find like if I really love the material, I like it. But I just it's hard for me when you can't address things the way you can as a comic. Like as a stand-up, if you're bombing or whatever, you can just address it and say it and somehow make it work. But when you're in a scene, to me, it's so much harder because you can't do that. You have to just kind of go through the scene.
Yeah, stand-up is so hard. Not hard. It's hard to get excited about stand-up anymore because it's a job and we've done it so much. It's like now you're... It's no longer like when you open mic and you're just happy to get on stage and you get those butterflies when they call you back and like, you got the 9-10 spot tonight when you're first starting. I almost feel like I get that back. But stand up now, it's like, how much are the tickets? How many did we sell? Who else is on the show? It's very much a business. Whereas like for acting, I mean, I get acting jobs, but it's not like I'm turning everything down and I'm reading scripts going, I don't want this, I want this. So to me, it's still exciting quote unquote want it. When somebody calls me and
right.
Like, hey, we want you for this part. You know, that's exciting. Once you get on set, you're just working. The exciting part is the phone call that they want you, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, I got it. Like they're going to fly me somewhere. It really is weird. No matter how long you're around, if they're flying you somewhere, you feel like I fucking made it. They're putting me on a plane to go somewhere.
I know. And that's probably the only thing I haven't done yet either is like gone overseas to do a film. I've been to Canada. Right. But I haven't been like, you hear other guys are going to Europe and Germany and Australia and stuff. I haven't had that happen yet. So,
how nice is it to have two things coming out pretty close in time? Doesn't that make you just feel busy? And when you have a couple of things happening at once, one coming out the other, it just feels good to know that you got shit going on in your career.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Both of them have been like finished for over a year and a half. So you're just kind of we've just been kind of waiting. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm excited about them both. It should be pretty good.
And what about the fights? Do you watch the fights a lot? Do you watch MMA a lot or no?
Yeah, I'm diehard because I grew up boxing, but then they don't fight each other like that, and they don't have the reality show that got me excited. Because I was shooting Little Man in Vancouver, Ultimate Fighter 2, and that was when I think it was the Josh Koscheck season. And I remember it was a black guy with the blonde hair. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a lot of channels. So for some reason, we were getting the Ultimate Fighter. And that's what got me like into the UFC. And I like how you guys fight each other. The best guys fight each other.
Yeah, that's what I hate about boxing too, is it just took too long to make fights happen. I had even less faith in those judges than I do in the judging in MMA. Very, very frustrating. What do you think of Diaz against Jake Paul as far as boxing is concerned? I mean, Jake Paul, I think, is a lot better than people want him to be because people don't like him and they think they want to just see him get his ass kicked. But I think he can handle himself better than people think. What do you think he does against Nate Diaz?
That's an interesting one because I've never seen Nate Diaz never been like not cold. So it's weird. I can't even visualize him just getting, I can't see him doing like a Ben Askren and just getting knocked out. I just can't see it until it happens. So it makes me wonder, is it like, you know, Nate is like always in shape. He's stronger at the end of the fight than the beginning. Like the longer it goes, I wonder if Nate just, it could end up being like the, honestly, the Leon Edwards UFC fight where Nate just like boom, boom, boom. And at the end, he'll have his moment. And he might not win the decision, but he'll probably walk away like, yeah, you know, I didn't make myself look bad.
What do you think, Matt? Is it one of those things where, because his hands are so good, but are they also better in MMA than they will be in boxing because he's worn you down, grinding you up against the cage, something you can't really do in boxing because of the threat of the takedown or how good he is on the floor, all these things that kind of go into, like you have to worry about so many different things with Nate, but when you're boxing, you basically just have to worry about his hands.
Yeah, but unlike Ben Askren, or even I'm not sure about Tyron Woodley. I know he had power, but I don't know how many professionals he dealt with. I know that Nate Diaz, straight up sparring boxing, worked with world champions.
Yeah,
I don't want to throw the wrong name out there.
Here's Andre Ward. Yeah,
see, I was going to say that, and our producer confirmed it. I just wasn't sure of it. So yeah, he's worked in that field with you know, a straight up boxing. So he's not going to be a novice to it. It's not like he's just an MMA guy going, okay, I have to remember not to kick or do a double leg. He knows how to box. You know what I mean? So I think he's going to outlast them. And I wonder how many rounds it is. Do we even know what's up?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
The longer the better for Diaz.
Right.
You know? Hold on. Let's see. Jake is telling us it's going to take place at 185. Oh, okay. Yeah, Jake. How many rounds? And I'm kind of curious about that. Hey, Gary, did you ever train or anything?
Yeah, I've done, I used to be real good friends with Winky Wright. So I used to go to a couple of his fights, but it was towards the tail end of his career. But every time I go to St. Pete, he'd put me in the gym and stuff. Never got hit. It's just straight mitts. I was like, no, I'm not sparring. I'm not that dude.
But yeah, it's one of those things where I've always said I wanted to do it. I just never, like, just for self-defense and just to kind of, you know, cause you never know, it's some fucking lunatic. I don't necessarily worry about on stage because there's usually other people there, but you know, I haven't had any real physical problems on stage. Have you had any physical confrontations?
Not like that. I mean, I've always had people like try to come up on stage. It doesn't happen a lot, and it's more early in your career than later in your career.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had those, you know, drunk guys, and then you get on them a little too hard, and then they act like they're going to come on stage, but they really don't want to, you know?
Not to bring it up again, but isn't it crazy how everybody just despises Will Smith now after he did that to fucking Chris Rock? He was the most loved guy. He was the most fucking I Am Legend, fucking all the Bad Boys movies. Everybody loved him. Fresh Prince. Everybody can't. I can't stand the guy now. I can't even look at him. And I feel cuckold. But I don't know.
I think it's because of who he did it against. Like if he had slapped a guy like Rogan, a guy who everyone knows could smash his teeth, people would go, all right, well, he just got mad. But there seemed to be a bullying thing. Like, you know, you're a much bigger guy than he is, and you wouldn't have done it to certain guy. I think that's what it is as well. What do you think?
Yeah, and it was such a, of all the things, it wasn't even really a put down.
Right.
Like, G.I. Jane, if you got a chick that looks like G.I. Jane, I'm like, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't understand. I go, that wasn't a put down. We all know, like, as comedians, we could really go for the jugular, and that was very PG-ish.
Yeah.
That wasn't that harsh.
Yeah, when you get, it's funny you said that too, because I had a couple walk out one time, and I was kind of a dick to them as they left, but I had been taking it easy on her because the wife was heckling and the dumb husband's trying to defend her. And he got really mad at me, but I'm like, I know that I could really smash her, and I'm actually being a lot more gentle than I want to be because I figure you're in a bad position. So some people read that, they don't realize how mean you actually want to be and how harsh something you say could be. And it's like, I'm hitting you at a 3 instead of an 8 or a 9, and you're still getting angry about it. So yeah, you're right. That was a very mild joke that didn't deserve any kind of reaction.
That is funny you say that, because I've done that. I've had people in the audience, and the mate has kept me from really going where I want to go, because I'm like, I feel bad. Or it'd be like a drunk wife, and the husband's actually laughing, and he's trying to help you. And you feel so bad for him, and you just kind of fall back. I've done it before too.
Yeah, well, you sense that the guy's in a bad position. If the guy's being a dick, you go after both of them. But if the guy's like, you put yourself in the position of being out with this loud asshole, and you're like, oh, how embarrassing. He's probably humiliated.
Sometimes you're in a car, and there's a woman driving, and then she's, and the husband or the boyfriend's next door, like, and you see, you're like, I'm like, it's happened before like that, where I'm just like, oh, dude, don't do this to your boyfriend. Don't do this.
Hey, when you're in the UFC ring, can you hear hecklers in the middle of a fight?
Sometimes you hear weird things. I don't know why. Yeah. I remember I was fighting Carol Parisian, and Matt Hughes had the belt. And I remember we were circling at one point, and somebody's like, yeah, Hughes will beat both of them. I'm like, you motherfucker. Fighting this judo expert now, you cocksucker. Leave me alone. But it's weird how you hear weird things sometimes. Well, hey, when I fought St. Pierre, and a fucking deaf man could have heard the chants of fuck you, Sarah, in Montreal. So, I couldn't hear Ray Longo, who's a loud Italian gentleman, screaming at me in the corner. I could not hear him with the chants around us. Even George said to this day, he fought in front of double the crowd. That was 20,000. He fought in front of like 100,000, more than triple threat. And he said he's never had an audience louder than that. They fucking hated me. But, you're all cool now.
Yeah.
You hear some
that was cool here. About that was always cool about the bubble when they were going over to Abu Dhabi, because you could hear the coaches yelling the instruction. Yep. You could hear the elbows hitting. I mean, you heard everything.
Felt like that on The Ultimate Fighter. When I fought on The Ultimate Fighter, that's what it was like. It's like you're in a warehouse. It felt illegal. It's like, yo, what the fuck? Dean Thomas was like, hey, Matt, on The Ultimate Fighter, because it was like, we used to fight in front of people. So when we first fought there on season 4, he goes, Matt, man, it's all quiet. You hear everything. There's a bunch of rich white people around the thing. This feels wrong. Dean Thomas is fucking hysterical. But it does feel weird.
Is it harder to fight in front of no audience like The Ultimate Fighter than to be in front of, 15,000 people?
Oh, is it harder? I'm going to say it feels like a glorified sparring session, because that's kind of how sparring is sometimes, especially sometimes where maybe Longo, when I was training, he'd take me over to, let's say, Lou Neglia's school gym in Brooklyn, just to get a different body, a different feel. So you walk in there, it's quiet, and you spar. So it's like, it felt like a intense sparring session than a fight, if that makes sense, Yeah. It was different though, for sure. But as far as watching it, I enjoy both. I like sometimes when it's on the apex, when it's a little quieter compared to the big stadium sometimes. Other times, I love the big stadium with the crowd. So I love it all. I just love the fighting. So much fun. Yeah.
But I did like, it's funny how fast we got used to that fighting in that bubble, like, and hearing the coaches. And again, like you said, hearing the shots and the punches. And I missed the crowd at first. And then I was just like, fuck it. I like that I'm hearing this stuff now too. And championship fights had the same pressure as any other championship fight. And then the crowds came back and you're like, oh yeah, I really did miss that. But I do kind of miss hearing the instructions and the shots and all the little things you would pick up watching it when it was either in the apex or in that bubble.
Yeah. I hope that never happens to stand up. I hope we never have to perform in a bubble. With
well, you guys were at drive-throughs and shit like that during the had to do stuff like that.
I didn't do any of that. Did you do any of those shows, Gary? I did a lot of broadcasting, but I didn't do any stand-up on Zoom.
No, I didn't do any of that. Mm-mm. I got asked, and I was like, I'm just going to wait it out.
Yeah, it's humiliating enough to not have a good show when there's people in the room, much less a screen where you can just see a bunch of people look. I don't need to see their faces that clearly if they're not enjoying me. I like to convince myself that half the room is at least. Right. All right, let's get the final plug in too, because our show is almost over. I want to make sure we can see these projects you're working on. Chocolate Chips, when does that come out?
It's called Back on the Strip.
Sorry.
With the Chocolate Chips. I think it's August 18th. I think it just came out. It just that's when it's getting released. I think it's going to all the theaters too.
Oh, it's going to be an in-theater release. Okay. Yeah. And this Friday, what can they see this Friday? You said Amazon Prime, I think, is the place for this this recent one.
Yeah, it's called Dottie and Soul. So it's a good movie, man. I went to the screen a couple weeks ago and I was like, oh, okay, this turned out, because it was so spaced out.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. And you're shooting at a sequence. And I go, oh, okay. They have some good editors on this. They put it together nicely.
Isn't it nice when you watch yourself? Because you have so little control over the edit and they put it together and you go, fuck, actually, all right, good. I look good there. I did a good job. It's so terrifying when you're acting for that reason, because you can't control it after you do it.
And you forget some of your ad libs. You go, oh, okay. I forgot about that. You pat yourself like, oh, that's a good one, Gary. Way to come up with that.
Gary, it was good talking to you again, man. Come back again. Don't wait so long this time, and let's do it again soon. We'd love that you're a big fight fan, and anytime you need to come on and promote, feel free.
All right. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Okay, right, buddy. Gary. Good talking to you.
Take care, buddy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, Matt.
Hey, dude, listen.
Yeah.
Really quick. Let's just recap a few of those fights. A few of them.
Sure. Oh, I actually forgot about recapping the fights.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
We could have done that with Gary, too. I totally forgot. We did Smith against Johnny. We talked about for a second. But what do you think of Jailton Almeida? I think he's only been hit with two significant strikes in his UFC short career so far. If I read that correctly,
I'm a jiu-jitsu freak. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Keep taking him down. Keep subbing him. You know, he's explosive staying on his feet also. But he shot in somebody. It's funny. I forgot which one. They like, yo, he shot in like Randy Couture versus James Toney. He wasn't playing on the feet at all. But, hey, you're that explosive, man. You want to come in and wrap him up. It's like they said he lassoed his legs. It was awesome. And, he made it look very easy. I can't wait to see what's next for him. You know, I'm a jiu-jitsu fan, and he just passed that guard so methodical, got the mount position. It was just took the back. It was just jiu-jitsu 101.
Right.
Beautiful. I know Jairzinho tried to stay calm, but there's different levels, and the levels were just – it was too different.
Yeah, staying calm wasn't enough against him.
And Amanda's smart. Amanda's saying he wants Taya Tuivasa next.
Tuivasa, yep.
So, hey, man, that's a good call out, because we know that that's not his expertise on the floor. And he's got a big name. He's a big slugger. And if he doesn't land that shot, chances are, same thing could happen to him like what happened to Rosa Strike. So, smart call out for Almeida. Anthony Smith was game. And when he got that takedown, he battled through that takedown for the first round. I'm like, all right. Maybe if he does some damage, he could win this round. And then, you know, all is not lost, at least it's or make it more competitive. But then at the very last 10 seconds, Johnny Walker in that first round not only got up, but took him down to put a stamp on that first round.
Yeah.
And again, I agree. I heard some of the post-fight stuff with Dana saying that Johnny Walker won. He got the W, but he felt like he could have put him away. I think in that last round, if there was a 20 to 30% increase in activity, he could have put him away. I feel like Anthony, he's never looking for a way out, but he was at that door. He just needed to get pushed right through it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're right. And they did. I thought that he took the foot off the gas a little bit, and I don't know why he did it, but you're right. I thought he might have been able to put him away or come very, very close to it. And it seemed like he backed up a little bit, like he was content just to kind of not do anything reckless. So I noticed the same thing while they were fighting. And by the way, we have to take off our hat to fucking Matt Brown. That first round, short right to Court McGee. And I love the fact, like, you always have to let the ref stop it, but he just saw the way Court felt. That fight was over, and he knew he was knocked out. I love that. I was very happy for Matt Brown.
He tied the most knockouts in UFC.
17, right?
I think it's 13, but maybe.
Oh, is it 13? You might be right, Matt. 13. Sorry. Yeah.
And also getting back to Johnny Walker first of all, props to Matt Brown. Very, very impressive. But really back to that Johnny Walker fight. What makes sense is, and Jake the producer wrote this, that fight was supposed to be a main event.
Yeah.
So you're thinking that it might have been supposed to be five rounds. Maybe that has something to do with the pacing of Johnny Walker, because he was extremely patient and didn't really. But I mean, again, he had the juice.
Yeah,
he definitely had the juice. So I think I like to put him, either if not put him away, try to put him away.
Sure.
And he didn't. So, you know, it is what he still looked great. I like when he would do the low calf slot kick and he'd do it twice in a row. He's a freak. He's athletic. And props to not only him, but to his coach, Kavanaugh.
Right.
You know, because he's, he gets props for Connor, but he works with other people and he's doing fantastic. We have to mention Ian Garry, because that kid. I mean, he took out Daniel Rodriguez.
Yep.
And he did it style. I love the way he was kicking to the body, kicking to the body, kicking to the body. It's not going to the body now. Now it's going right to the dome. So it was strategic. For a young kid, 25 years old, he's really an intelligent fighter. I like his fight IQ, and he is dangerous. And Daniel Rodriguez is a guy with a lot of experience.
Yes.
It was a stand-up battle, and Ian just looked phenomenal.
Yes.
By the way?
What, buddy?
How tall is he?
Ian Garry, I don't know his height.
He's 6'3".
Okay.
As a welterweight. I won the title at the welterweight. 5'6". I'd have to fucking use his balls as a speed bag.
or a hat.
That's what I would do. I ran a hat into a drop of Sayanagi. I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
I meant to ask Cody Garbrandt about this, Matt, because on his Twitter, he was very annoyed about the Cody Stamann loss to Douglas Silva de Andrade. He thought it was kind of a robbery, and a lot of people thought there was a 10-8 round in the third. I watched that fight twice. I thought Silva de Andrade actually won that fight. I did not think that round three was a 10-8. I thought it was a very strong round for Stamann. But De Andrade fought back enough and landed enough good shots for that to be a 10-9. And I thought he absolutely outstruck him in the first two. So I thought that was the right decision. A lot of people got on the judges for that. But I thought that Silva De Andrade won the fight.
Some people have a short memory and they remember how a fight ends, not how it begins.
Yeah.
And they forget, all right, this guy's ending strong. But what happened prior?
Sure. So
you can understand Cody's thing like, man, if I just had more time or another round. But you don't. And now we can't, if we tried to play catch up, and I did a mighty good job of trying to do that, but maybe a little too little, a little too late. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree with the decision. Even though it was a great fight, I thought that was the right move.
And by the way, Brian Battle, 14 seconds. He's been on here before, Brian. That was great. And yeah. Gabe Green, listen, man, you can't say he didn't bring it. He brought it for 14 seconds.
Dude, they were saying, I think Dominic was saying, it's one of those things where it's two guys in a phone booth, whoever just lands first. It's one of those, they're both swinging hard. Whoever gets caught first is probably going to drop, and that was what happened.
Hey, that's true. But props, man.
Yes.
Listen, man, there's a new female fighter in town. Listen, Lisboa. Lisboa, was that her first fight in the UFC? It was her first fight in the UFC.
1-0 in the UFC, yes.
She looked awesome. And she was Jessica Rose Clark.
Yep.
Trying to get that fight to the floor and had a really hard time trying to get it there. Really hard time. And then finally in the last round, she got a rear naked choke.
Yep.
Lisboa. But standing up, she was winning the battles. She won the battle with the wrestling. She got a nice wizard takedown. And she showed she was hard to get taken down and very accurate punches and bunches. It was very impressive for a first. Yeah. I was very impressed for a first.
First UFC fight? Yeah, especially against someone like Jessica Rose Clark, who has had quite a few. I mean, she's had nine UFC. That was her ninth UFC fight.
Two more I want to talk about. Carlos Olberg. Listen,
yep. Dude.
First of all, the guy could be a male model. He's walking around like this guy. You think, maybe he doesn't want it as much because he could always retire and be the next Zoolander. No, He's a bad motherfucker.
Yes, and he is.
I'll tell you right now, the timing. When was it a check hook? Man, what was it? What did he hit him with?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I'm putting together with another fight now. It was because Johnny Walker had something similar when Anthony Smith was coming in. I believe it was. I'm pretty sure it was a hook when he was coming in. But man, did he look, he is so on point with his strikes. Very accurate and very dangerous, man. What's his UFC record?
He's 5-1 in the UFC, 10-1 overall.
Well, he's looking amazing.
And yes, he is.
Awesome. And,
did you want to mention Tim Means against Murano?
Tim Means, first of all, always a dog in a fight.
Yeah.
A bad, bad, dirty bird. Did he call him Dirty Bird? Is that his nickname? I think it is. Is it Dirty Bird? Let us make that up. What's Tim's nickname? Look it up. I think it's Dirty. Is it Dirty Bird or did I just literally make that up? Because I'm looking at my bird now. It is Dirty Bird.
It is Dirty Bird.
You look crazy. You're looking at me like you want to peck at me. Listen, Jimmy, I love you. Listen, it is Dirty Bird. And he looked good.
Yeah.
But Alex Moreno, Murano.
Murano, yeah.
Listen, he's been on the show before. He is, how many losses do you have in the UFC?
He is 12-5 in the UFC. He's had 17 UFC fights.
In his last how many fights, he's like 1-5 in his last how many fights. So it's like,
He lost to Ponzinibbio, but he was 4-1 in his last five, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I was close.
He had a great 2021.
In his fight with Ponzinibbio, he was winning until he wasn't, until he got caught.
Yep.
So, you know, that was in the third round, and that's a fight that he was winning. So he is really looking awesome. He missed a spinning back fist, and Tim went under it right into a guillotine, and it was all she wrote. So to have that type of – his striking is so good, and to have that type of guillotine, almost like Hinata Makano, when you have that type of guillotine, a Brian Ortega, it's such a fight ender. It's like that gets under your gets around your neck. Man, you better hope you're Habib versus fucking Dustin Poirier. You know how to get out of that shit because it could be all she wrote. So I was very impressed with Alex. Happy for Saif Saeed. And good stuff, man.
Has to suck, too, when you go for a guillotine like that. And like, you know, just watching as a fight, it's so stressful to watch that when you see the neck beginning to clear and the head pops up. That has to be so, I mean, physically, I know it's really hard on your arms to come so close to have somebody pop their head out. Has to really suck as a fighter.
It does suck. But when you're watching it, when I'm watching it and you see the head almost popping out, that's when it gets on the tightest. So that's why I'm
really?
Like, oh, is he surviving it or is he going to go out? I don't know what's going to happen. So it gets exciting. Jimmy.
Yes, buddy.
At 3:20 today, I am doing our good friend Dean Thomas's podcast.
Oh, tell him I said hello. I love Dean Thomas, as you know.
I will tell him, and I want to do three things before that. Do you know what those three things are?
Have a coffee, take a shit, and I can't think of the third thing. Smoke pot. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to smoke, take a shit, and have an espresso.
I'm doing two of them now. I'm doing all three.
You're shitting right now, and you're just drinking coffee.
The three things, Jimmy, was caca, poopy, duty. So, yes, it's the one thing I had to do. And,
okay.
You know, the great Mel Brooks. Listen,
Jimmy, I have to plug something.
Plug it!
This Wednesday, every week has been selling out. Fat Black Pussycat doing my hour. This weekend, I'm on the road again. Bethlehem, PA is almost sold out. There's a couple of tickets left for Friday night in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And Saturday in New Jersey, I am at the Wellmont Theater in Montclair. So come out. The tickets have sold very well there, too. So it's nice to see. But those are the two gigs I have this week.
Jimmy, man, I got one gig. It's Sarah BJJ. I'm there every fucking day. People come in. What are you doing here? I go, this is what I do.
That's it.
Make good people dangerous.
All right.
Jimmy, by the way, call Jedi.
I did. I already texted with him.
What a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart. I'm so excited for your journey in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And we'll keep the audience. I'm just letting them know. I'm not getting too much. We'll let them know about your journey as you progress on it.
As I start, yeah. But I've already reached out. We've already gone back and forth. So, yeah, very nice guy.
Very nice. He didn't want to charge you. He goes, no, Fred. I go, dude.
Oh, no, no. Of course he has to charge me.
Come on. He's not going to want to, you know.
No, I wouldn't do that. Like, because again, I don't want to feel guilty taking up someone's time. And I want to take more than one. Like, you know, I like privates are good for me because I can, the schedule, you can just do it like when I have time, as opposed to classes because I'm on the air in the morning. I can't do morning classes.
Hey, Jimmy, standing update. Jim is 18 and 11 in picks, and Maddie is 14 out of 15.
Wow. Wait, no, 14 and 15, not 14 out of 15. Wait.
I read that wrong.
Is that out of 29? Yeah, look at Matt making it. Jimmy has lost 11. Me, I've only got one. You bullshitter. I'm shocked that I'm 18 and 11, but Matt's picks have been so good. Like, again, let me see. Overgone has the score at Jim 66.25 to Matt 63.
Hey, Jake, we don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
What those points mean?
Just say who's getting them right and wrong. Can you just keep
it? I mean, I happen to be very good at just guessing.
3 points with these, for accurately predicting. Who came up with this?
Oh, I like that. Okay. You know what? Can you give us the point system next week on Wednesday? I don't mind a point system. Makes it more interesting.
It does make it interesting.
And you're good at that.
He is good at that.
You.
Yeah, Jimmy, I had so much fun, man.
No, Matt, you're good at that. You're good at making these by round picks. Your analysis of fights will always be better than mine, and you've made some great picks, so that should be taken into credit. Half the times I'm just going, I think he's due for a win. It's hard to pick with these guys. They're all so fucking good, and any one of them can beat you anyway. Court McGee could have fucking dragged Matt Brown to the floor and done damage and worn him out, and he got caught coming. You know, it is what it is. So it's hard to pick.
That's why we watch the fights.
Jimmy. Thank you to Gary Owen. I love Gary Owen. Always a great guest, and he was fun to have on. And of course, the great Cody Garbrandt. So happy for that win over Trevin Jones. And I'll see you in 2 days.
I'll see you then, Jimmy. Can't wait.
Bye, young fella.
Bye, everyone.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.